So we're continuing in here in the fifth perek in Rav Volbi's introduction to mitzvos. And last time we discussed the overall role that mitzvos play in our lives as the central focal point of where we're constantly going, what's important to us. So we now add two more components to this discussion about the nature of mitzvos, and we're starting in the third paragraph, which is line 8, where Rav Volbi says the following: Ein avodas Hashem b'li mitzvos. There is no service of Hashem without mitzvos, without the, as we said last time, the word tzavsa, the ability to connect practically. And therefore, he quotes a passage in the Talmud, Ha'omer, someone who says, Al kan tzipor yagiu rachamecha, that your mercy should reach the bird's nest, mishatkin oso, you silence that person. Sha'osa midosa shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu rachmin, that person is diverting the midos, the character traits of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to rachamim, ve'einan ela gezeros. And rather, they are simply decrees. So what does he mean here? So he's quoting a Gemara Maseches Brachos, because we know there is a mitzvah called Shiluach HaKein, which is sending away the mother bird. And there is an element that you can take away from that mitzvah, which demonstrates a measure of compassion, because instead of taking the eggs, first you send away the mother bird, and then you take the eggs. Although I will tell you from personal experience, not far from my in-laws, there is a canal. So we were once walking along the canal, and we came across, there was a duck. There are always ducks on the canal. And the duck was sitting on a bunch of eggs, so I was very excited. So maybe we could fulfill the mitzvah Shiluach HaKein. The problem is, so first I had to call Rabbi Sabalovsky because it was on someone's private property and you can only do Shiluach HaKein, you can only send away the mother bird if it's baderech, if it belongs to no one. So we had a whole discussion on the phone. Did the person whose property it was, were they kona the birds with a kinyan chatzer and therefore I can't do Shiluach HaKein, or did they really not want the birds and they weren't kona with Shiluach HaKein? I will tell you that when I did the Shiluach HaKein, it actually felt pretty cruel sending away this mother bird. It was the Rachmanis. I was like, you know what? Leave the thing alone. Don't get involved. I didn't want the eggs. That's already a whole separate machlokas. But the point is that in theory, it's supposed to be out having compassion. You could take away that there's a measure of compassion that you have, that you shouldn't take away the eggs while the mother is standing there. But the Gemara says that's not the way that we're supposed to look at it. Rather, we're supposed to look at mitzvos as gzeras hamelech, as the decree of the king. And then he quotes Rashi, who says that v'hu lo l'rachamim asa ela lahatel al Yisrael chukai gzerosav. The purpose of mitzvos is just to give us decrees. And this is part of a larger debate about the nature of mitzvos. Is there anything inherently spiritual about sending away the mother bird, or is it just a way for us to do the will of Hashem? Similarly, a lot of people are wondering now, this is the time where we study karbanos, sacrifices in the book of Vayikra. And it's sometimes a challenge to connect to those things, so you have to figure out, is there something inherently spiritual about sacrifices, or is it just a way to listen to what Hashem said? Well, the reason why this is important for us to keep in mind, as Rashi points out, is that we have to understand that we do what Hashem asks of us because, specifically for that reason, that it's to listen to Him. And this gets to kind of a more fundamental point, which is we have to ask ourselves the question, you know, leading a religious and a spiritual life, so who benefits from that? So obviously we benefit on many levels from fulfilling mitzvos. You know, one way to look at fulfilling mitzvos, it's like collecting valuables. You know, if somebody said to you, you had a 15-minute grocery spree in the store, and you had 15 minutes to collect all the items that you want, and whatever you can collect in 15 minutes, you can take home with you. So you would hop around, you'd catch as much as you can. So that's one way, whatever mitzvahs we put in our pocket in this world, so that's what we're going to take with us. It's true for the actions that we drew. Of course, it's also true for the money that we have and the money that we use on tzedakah. The Gemara says at the beginning of Maseches Bava Basra that if you want to know how much money you really have the money that you have saved for you for the next world, and that's the money that you give to tzedakah. There's a story, I don't know, it's an apocryphal story about the Abarbanel. The Abarbanel was one of the most senior Jewish Spanish officials before the expulsion, and he was an extremely wealthy person, and so there were constantly people who were jealous of him, and they made complaints about him, and so once there were complaints that he was embezzling money and tax fraud and all kinds of things, so they had to make an accounting. So someone asked him from the government to please provide an accounting of his wealth, so he sent in a certain dollar amount, and they said, we know that that's not everything you have. He said, no, that's really the money that I have, because that's the money that I gave to charity. After 120, you can't take anything else with you except for the zchuyos that you have. So that's one way to look at the mitzvos that we do as something that we amass. We'll come back to that maybe in a minute if we have time. But there's another aspect of it that we have to think about, because that is kind of putting it in our pocket for the next world, which is true. But the other question is, well, does the fulfillment of mitzvos affect our life in this world? The Gemara has a principle, schar mitzvah b'hai al malecha, you don't receive reward for mitzvahs in this world. On the other hand, the Pasuk says, letov lach, it's for our benefit. If a person is living a wretched, miserable experience in their Jewish life, so then that's not proper Judaism. And that's the old story that many of you are familiar with about the suitcase in O'Hare. I'll tell it again, even though for many of you it's boring. There was an elderly person, let's say I can envision an elderly person. I still remember when my grandmother, she lived and be well in Yerushalayim, she came to Chicago. At that time, it was 7 or 8 years ago, she was in her late 80s, mid-80s. So she had a wheelchair person take her through Atlanta and then to Chicago. So when you have the wheelchair person, they take you all the way down to the baggage claim. You know, in O'Hare, it's about 10 miles long. You have to get your carousel. You sit on the side, so the baggage claim is there, and all the carousel is going around and around, and the bags come. So you can imagine an elderly person sitting in a wheelchair, and they have the attendants, the Misharis fellow, whatever, the porters, who push the wheelchair from the gate, from the jet bridge, all the way down to get your luggage for the people who need a wheelchair. So it's great. So the elderly person says to the porter, says, you know, I'm going to sit over here in the wheelchair, and when you get the luggage, I'll tell you, you'll bring it over, I'll check the tag to make sure that it's right. So the porter says to the person, well, what does my luggage look like? What am I looking for when I go to find your bag? So they say it's a black, square, rectangular, piece of luggage. The guy says, thank you very much. So the person is sitting in the wheelchair, and the porter goes to the carousel, it's snaking around. So he goes to pick up one bag, he lifts it up, picks it up with two hands, he starts to put it on that trolley thing, and the person waves them off, says, no, not my bag. And then they put it back, they pick up the next bag, they pick it up, it's one of these ginormous suitcases, huge Samsonite suitcases, they put it down, and immediately turns around, they say, no, not the right bag. They pick up a third bag, the porter does, and brings it over, and then the elderly person in the wheelchair looks at it, looks at the tag, checks the thing, they're very meticulous about these things, and then they say, yes, that's my bag. So the porter says to this elderly person, says, I don't understand. You just spent 3 minutes checking to make sure that this was your suitcase. How did you know that the suitcase that I picked up on the belt was not your suitcase? You could tell that from 40 feet away. So the person, I envision my grandmother, the person will say to you, look, that suitcase that you picked up, it took you two hands and all of your strength to lift that suitcase. That suitcase is so heavy, there's no way in the world that that's my suitcase. I never travel that heavy. I always pack a light suitcase. I couldn't lift it even if I wanted to. So the minute that you picked it up and I saw that you had to strain to pick up that suitcase, I knew right away it's not my suitcase. So the Rebbe Shlom gave us two tablets at Sinai, and he said to Shevra, if these two tablets are so heavy that you have to put on one of those Velcro belts to lift them, you got the wrong tablet. Somebody's selling you something on the, in Battery Park that's not real. I should use that reference. I don't know how many people have been to Battery Park where they sell those things. The point is, is that Yiddishkeit is supposed to be l'tov lach, it's supposed to be good. However, it's important to keep in mind that that's not the purpose of mitzvos. And sometimes if we look at mitzvos in that way, it actually becomes less about the mitzvos and more about us. And I wonder if that's what this Gemara is really getting at. Meaning the following. Rav Soloveitchik has, in a few of his essays, now I'm not saying it quite as extreme as he does, because Rav Soloveitchik, Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, he lives with like high-level existential angst. Like serious, serious tension in his life as a brisker. And I'm not sure how healthy that is for most people. That's probably not what the doctor ordered for most people. But if you're a brisker, that's good. It's very fine. But for the rest of us, aside from that tension, he does point out, even if you don't go that extreme, he says, look, the purpose of mitzvahs are not some kind of opioid for the masses. It is not that if you fulfill all the mitzvahs, that's an automatic ticket to an easy, simple, calm life. He said, people make a mistake that they view mitzvahs and they view a Torah life as a self-help book. And that's not what it is. And the danger of doing that is that a person could go through their whole life and fulfill all the mitzvahs and say, wait a minute, where's the Stephen Covey? Where's the magic? Where's the secret sauce that's supposed to make my life perfect? And the Rav says, that's not true. Mitzvahs are about connecting us to something that is transcendent, to the Ribbono Shel Olam, to bring us closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which actually creates tension in our lives, because we're living in this world and we're trying to connect to a different world. I'll give you an example. A person could think that they are married and they're going to observe all the laws of Taras HaMishpacha, family purity, and that's going to be the secret for a healthy, balanced, and wonderful marriage. But the truth is, it's not so at all. The laws of Taras HaMishpacha do not guarantee, nowhere does it say it's a guarantee for a happy marriage. It's a framework for a very happy marriage. It's a tool that can be used for building a happy marriage. But that's not an instant happy marriage in a box. We have to use that as a way to connect to our HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to bring values into our life, to keep focus on what's important, and by constantly living with that focus on Ribbono Shel Olam in our lives, we can build a meaningful life. And that will contribute to happiness, right? The definition of happiness, Talben Shachar points out, is the nexus between pleasure and meaning. So the Torah certainly provides a framework for that, but it's not an excuse. You can't delegate the work of bringing the Ribbono Shel Olam into your life and building it for yourself to say, well, as long as I follow whatever it says in the Shulchan Aruch, that's going to make my life good. It's going to make it happy. That's not what it is. The mitzvahs are there to focus us on being connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not there to serve us. They're there to help us. They're there as an opportunity for us, but they're not there to serve us. So we have to make sure that, although yes, it's a confusing message, yes, living a Torah life is amazing. And the people who we look to, who we know, who are the great tzaddikim, they had the happiest, best, most meaningful lives. You look at someone like the great tzaddik Rabbi Aryeh Levin. This man had the most unbelievably fulfilled and happy life. He didn't own a pair of gloves. It didn't matter that he didn't own a pair of gloves, because when they tried to buy him gloves, he gave them away to the next person who needed the gloves more than he did. They tried to buy him an oven. So he had such an unbelievably fulfilled life. It is possible, of course. The Torah is a framework for a happy and fulfilled life. But it's not a self-help book. It's a framework for us to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when we do that work, we create meaning in our lives. So I wonder if that's what the Gemara is alluding to by saying, Al-Kan Sipri Yagir Rachamecha, of course, a person who follows the Torah is going to purify, and he gets to that two paragraphs later, which we're not going to have time for so much. Of course it's going to purify us, it's going to refine our character, but we have to do that work. We can't just say, I said brachos today and that's going to be enough. Really, the mitzvos are interrupters, they're reminders to bring Hashem into our lives. So now he says, kind of the next step of this process, in the next paragraph, starting on line 13, Ein pis'alus mishrirus halev ela ayedei maisa ha-mitzvah. There is no way to elevate our soul rather than through doing the act of a mitzvah. The act of a mitzvah, you can give different mishalim. You could talk about how it breaks down barriers between us and Hashem. But here in this context, he's talking about the ennobling of ourselves. It's like removing, it's like brushing your teeth, lahavdil. It's like doing exercise so you remove the plaque in your arteries. The mitzvahs that we do, the ma'aseh mitzvahs, that action of connecting through Hashem, through that spiritual act, that is a his'alos mishrivas halev. Why do we have mitzvahs all the time? For exactly this reason. The purpose of doing mitzvahs is actually to interrupt our day, to interrupt our schedule. Sometimes we have mitzvahs that are so much upheaval that they turn our whole life upside down. Like Pesach. Pesach is a mitzvah of total upheaval. And then you have mitzvahs that more go with the flow, like Sukkot. If you look, there's a Meshech Chachma who talks about these two kinds of mitzvahs. There are mitzvahs that they go against the grain, they interrupt your life, they say, you know, I have to stop doing what I'm doing, I have to totally shift. And then there are sometimes where the mitzvahs go with the flow. But one of the benefits of the mitzvahs, again, it's not to be a self-help book, but what is the purpose of mitzvahs connecting to us to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Well, the more we refine ourselves, the more we connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's how we are more noble, more spiritual, and we arrive at his'alus. We are elevated, mishrirus halev, from this kind of decaying spiritual state. And therefore, he makes the following interesting argument. When a person does a mitzvah that's not easy, that's how they grow. Doing something that's not easy is the formula for growth. So if you look at mitzvahs in a certain sense, like spiritual exercise, and if that's the mashal, I can understand why some people don't like mitzvahs, and some people mitzvahs are annoying, because I don't know about anybody else. For me, exercise is annoying. I much prefer to eat than I do exercise. Exercise is miserable, usually. But you have to do it because it strengthens your muscles and it's good for your heart and all kinds of other things they tell you that you have to do. When you do mitzvos, you strengthen your spiritual muscles. And the harder, the more challenging the mitzvah is, the more benefit there is. What do they say? No pain, no gain. So it's not that mitzvahs are supposed to be painful, but to the extent that you really invest yourself in a mitzvah, that's how much you're going to benefit from it. You know, to the extent that when we do B'dikas Chametz, we're also thinking about the Yetzer Hara, and when you take out that candle, the Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam, you really take a few minutes as you're walking from room to room to think about, where is my Gaiva, where is my Seor Shabi'isa? And the more challenging it becomes, the more difficult it is, so the more we get out of it. It's like exercise. The higher the incline, the more you benefit. So that's true for mitzvos in general. So therefore, Avoldi says something interesting. He says the Gemara, he explains the Gemara on the next line, that Godol ha-mitzuva va'ose mimisha eno mitzuva va'ose. The Gemara says in Kiddushin that it's greater, the merit is greater for somebody who is obligated to do a mitzvah than somebody who is not obligated to do a mitzvah. I would have thought the opposite, right? You take somebody who volunteers out of the goodness of their heart, and they donate their time to a particular cause, so you would say, wow, that's incredibly noble. Somebody who does what they have to do. So then why is that greater? So he quotes a Tosfos, and Tosfos says, you know why? Because when you're obligated to do something, you feel a sense, a tiny little sense of resentment. When I volunteer for something, I have a fallback. And what is that? At the end of the day, you know what? If I don't want to do it, I don't have to do it. there isn't that sense of obligation, that kind of nagging feeling like, I have to do this. So there is an element, he quotes from Tosfos, that he is a person who is mitzuva v'osa, he or she has to really overcome something. You know, if Pesach was voluntary, and everybody said, you know what, if you want to volunteer to make Pesach, so then you might have some people who would stand up and say, you know what, I'll do it! I'll do it! I only own a studio apartment, and it's gluten-free. I'll have Pesach, no problem. I'll make Pesach, great. That's fine. Because you know what, at the end of the day, the person who volunteers, when they crack, they can always just run to 7-Eleven. The Eino Mitzuva V'Ose has that sense of obligation that, no, whether I like it or not, I'm in it. And so what happens is that we, by being Mitzuva V'Ose, we got to take that deep breath, and we got to say, whether we like it or not, we have to do this. The same way that when we leave the doctor's office with that prescription, we have to do it whether we like it or not. There's an element of mitzuvah. It's commanded. It's not a voluntary thing to do mitzvahs. But you know what? When we do that, we grow. When we exercise the spiritual muscles that we have, that creates the hisalos mishrivas halev. And it's never too late. There was a recent study that I heard on the news of a group of people in the 50s and 60s who had never done exercise, and a group of researchers took them and a parallel group, a control group, who also had the same sense of sedentary lifestyle over the course of their life. Neither of them had done exercise before, and they took this group of people in their 50s and 60s and set them on an exercise regimen. And what they found was that even though these people had never done exercise for 50 and 60 years, but now that they started exercising, over the course of a period of time, they were actually able to rewind the clock of their heart. That their cardio health changed. And this was kind of revolutionary because they realized that, you know, it's talking not too late. Just because a person never exercised before, they can still exercise now. And isn't that the whole story about mitzvahs? A person could go 40 or 50 years, the Gemara says, without doing mitzvahs. But it's not too late. It doesn't matter. Because mitzvahs are like muscles. They're like spiritual muscles. So the same way that we can get on track for exercise whatever age, whatever stage in our life, doesn't matter. So too when it comes to mitzvahs. And when we do that, we have this hisalus mishriris halev. We have this elevation. We become noble. We've broken the barriers between us and Hashem. And finally, one last note. You see where it is, line 17, next paragraph. Hamitzvos mitzarfos es ha'adam. The mitzvos purify us. Kihin matbios al chayenu seder eloki, because they imprint on our lives a seder eloki, a divine order. Hamaromim osanu, that elevates us. Mipashtos v'chomrius hachayim, from the simple and the mundane physical life that we live. And he quotes the pasuk, Imras Hashem Tzrufa, the statement of God, it's a purifying statement. Lo nitnu mitzvos, the purpose of mitzvos, li Yisrael to Yisrael, elo litzarif behemes habrios, to purify us. The word litzarif also could be applied to a smith, a silversmith, who will take a chunk of silver that has dross and has pure silver and melt it down and shape it and form it into something magnificent. So what is the takeaway from this? What's the role of mitzvahs? The answer is it's not one-dimensional. It's complicated. On the one hand, mitzvahs are a way to connect to Hashem. On the other hand, they are a challenge. On one hand, mitzvahs are there to purify us. On the other hand, they're not there as a self-help book. So each one of these perspectives needs to fill out a holistic view an integrated view into how we view mitzvos. A person who only looks at mitzvos as a way of litzarif es atzmo may be missing out on realizing that there's actually a God involved. A person can go through their whole life of doing mitzvos and forget about God. It's totally true. But the opposite is true also, that if it's only about Avdei Hashem and there's nothing to do with me, so then a person could go through their whole life but not realize the effect that it has on them and the role that it plays in their life. So I think there are kind of multiple components that we always need to think about as we go through our life and as we do mitzvos. And I wonder, and this is something that everybody can reflect on in their own life, at different points in our life and as it relates to different mitzvos, we emphasize these aspects differently. When we have a difficult mitzvah, maybe that's a time when we think about, you know, through this challenge, we get stronger. When we have a mitzvah that maybe comes second nature, we emphasize in our mind the fact that, well, the purpose of this mitzvah is not because that's what comes naturally to me. There are some people who doing chesed is so natural to them that they don't ascribe it to a spiritual mission. They just do it because that's what they do. Well, that's like saying, well, the mitzvahs are there just to al tzipor. No, we have to remember that it could be that it does come natural to someone to do chesed, but that act of chesed is also a divine service. And by doing that, it's not just because that's what makes me feel good, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives me an opportunity to connect with Him. So, to me, this is it's a complicated picture, but I think it's a very rewarding picture, because you can see that at different points in your life, different perspectives on mitzvahs can take on different kinds of meaning. And so we realize that mitzvahs are more than just do's and don'ts. They are the tzavsa, they are the connection point to Hashem, and ultimately they are there, even though they're not a self-help book, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu did them as a favor for us to connect to Him, to refine ourselves, and to raise ourselves up from the basic life that we have, to constantly interrupt it with mitzvos, sometimes on an hourly basis, sometimes on a daily basis, sometimes on an annual basis, to recalibrate our lives. And that's what Pesach is going to do for us, hopefully, to recalibrate our lives to make sure that we are on the correct spiritual path that we really want to set for ourselves. Each one of us has a spiritual path. We can find that path through the interruption of mitzvos as we connect to Hashem. So I wish each one of you